This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get reward points delivered too. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Jetson's there, Billy did! The goal, Chris Billy Huddersfield Town! The most famous goal of Chris Billy's life.
Is this the moment for Lee Fowler? It is. Take your place in Division 2. Huddersfield.
Oi. Thank you.
Doopie and Steve Simonson's boots now. He's missed. Steve Simonson clears the frame of the goal and collapses in a heap of tears. Huddersfield Town are promoted.
Christopher Schindler has a chance to write his name in Huddersfield Town legend. And he takes that chance!
Guten Tag and willkommen to the Andy Takes That Chance podcast, where gegenpressing is back at Huddersfield Town. One man who is not back, though, is Mark Fotheringham. Fothers took to the Scottish Sun this weekend and bemoaned, despite having a stellar CV, that he wasn't taken seriously in Scotland, and then went on to say that his record stood up next to Neil Warnock's last season. Andre Brighton Wright arrived for the game on Saturday and very much got the badge in, as Town fans look forward to what the new man can bring. And now the question is, what can these men bring? Joining me, Matt Shaw, is Johnny Gillespie and Ian Kilroy to look back over that last week in HD1. How are we doing, chaps?
Thank you.
Yeah, not bad. Looking forward to what's to come.
Splendid. Right, so as always, this episode is sponsored by Magic Rock Brewing. Get over to www.magicrockbrewing.com. Use our code of AHTTC10 and you will get 10% off all your online orders. Also get there for match day as well. Have a pint with one of the lads, maybe Brady or Cozzy or something. We'll all be milling around there. Right, okay, so we've got two games this week to cover. Huddersfield, we'll start with the most recent, which is still hurts. Huddersfield Town 1, Hull City 2. So Town, the start of this game really, boys, looked, Town were really leggy, weren't they, and tired straight away from kickoff in this game. The Hull goal came after a little bit of pressure from them, but it was such a poor early goal to concede, wasn't it? It's corners not really dealt with by Matos, where he puts it up in the air. Could Nichols have come and punched it? Maybe, maybe not. Jones then sort of bullies Matos, and it's a really clever header from him back to Greaves, who hooks it in. And would Nichols be disappointed with that? I'd imagine the manager would have been disappointed with a start killer.
Yeah, I think you've got to hope for Nichols to do a bit better. But it was a similar kind of shot than last week. What with it, what Rothwell, where it was for Southampton when he's smashed it in from the corner. But really, to me, it was a simple one we could have got rid of. Pearson, for some reason, doesn't jump for the header. Him and Hoggy are kind of both stood there, and it's just all a bit of a mess. And generally, we've been pretty good from set pieces defending them anyway. And all of a sudden, we just looked. I think we looked tired. The effort wasn't quite there, and I think it just set kind of the tone for that first half. It just felt like Pearson doesn't make mistakes like that, and he just didn't go to meet the header when normally he'd clear everybody out and just get rid of it. But like you say, Matos had a bit of an opportunity to get rid of it first time. He didn't. Pearson and Hogg both kind of made a bit of a mess of it. And again, at championship level, if you make mistakes like that, you pay for it, and pay for it we did really early doors. And again, after such a busy week, it's just not the start you want at home. It really isn't the start, because it takes then a lot of effort to get back into the game, and we were looking that we were lacking it already.
Tough one, wasn't it, Johnny, to swallow, because we've been really at it, haven't we? Come out of the traps blazing, so to speak. And I'm sure that we'll talk about the Middlesbrough game a little. The Sunderland game. Shouldn't really confuse the two. We'll get anger some of their fans. But we, you know, that sort of was a real energetic performance against them, and we looked really sort of flat the last 20 minutes against them because we'd run out of energy. And I think it sort of spilled over, didn't it, into the start of this game, where we just kind of came out a little bit flat. But the first half after that really didn't offer much, did we? I mean, us and Hull didn't really do too much. There's a couple of players maybe having an off day, Pearson and Hogg in particular, as Killers mentioned, sort of struggled in that first half. And Matty Pearson's not known for his passing, let's be honest, but his passing accuracy in the first half was like 44.5%, and that probably wasn't great for a defender, because usually the defenders sort of knock it between each other, don't they, and get the stats up to sort of, you know, above 80%. But, you know, in fairness to Matty Pearson, his man never really got past him, Zerari, who was at Burnley last year. But and I thought Brody Spencer did a quite a good job on Philogene on the other side in that first half as well. I mean, he kicked him up in the air at one point, didn't he, just to exert some dominance on him. You know, I'm surprised he didn't pee on him afterwards. It was a proper, you know, sort of young alpha moment, wasn't it? But yeah, it was, I mean, the goal was disappointing, wasn't it? But the rest of the half, just a bit flat, Johnny.
Yeah, it was a bit flat. And I think I always get a little bit worried when we have a 24 hours less to prepare for a game. I don't know, I've always looked at it, and I always kind of look at when it's a Tuesday, Wednesday, I always look and see who we play on the Saturday, whether they play on the Tuesday and the Wednesday. And if they've got that little bit extra time, I always seem to think it's, I don't know, I get a bit annoyed about it. But them, to being professionals, athletes, they might not think that. Maybe they do. I know Worthington did mention it in his press conference, so maybe he kind of thinks a little bit the same as me. The other thing I'd add into that is, obviously, we have been playing far more aggressive, far more pressing than we have, obviously, under Moore. It's the first time it's the first time I've seen under Worthington we've come with three games a week, but really it isn't. But also the fact that we've not had that much of a tenure to kind of even say that. But you can see that, just that change in play, asking to do a little bit more, asking to maybe put a bit more energy in. And they have put energy in over the last few games. I think in that first half, it just looked like a team that were tired mentally and physically. And I think that's where you can go to the likes of Matty Pearson. Yeah, I think Stephen Chicken even said in his conclusion or his match ratings that if Pearson's having an off day, it's a worry, because like Killer said, that he doesn't really have an off day. He's kind of like a steady seven, really, week in, week out. And he did look a bit, as other players did, a little bit jaded. I think also in that scenario, one of the worst things you can do against a team like Hull is probably concede another goal, just because they're so comfortable in holding the ball and passing it around. They've also clearly one of those teams that like to waste time and go down and gamemanship and wind players up, which exerts even more, which Town exerts even more energy, get annoyed, get frustrated, you know what I mean, as well, which they did a lot in that first half, which was, I found, absolutely infuriating. Whether we'll come on to that or not, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just wasn't the ideal day at the office, really. A few things did quite work out. The other thing I'd maybe look to touch on as well is possibly, I don't know, the midfield that was picked might not have been ideal as well, which started to cause problems. I think that we could have been a bit braver. We could have been a bit more progressive in midfield, which might have helped combat that as well, which I know will come on to the second half, which might feature more. But yeah, it wasn't really ideal. It was a bit, nothing really in it. I said something at half time, other than, like say, a little bit of a mistake and a little bit of luck with the ball falls to their, I mean, falls to Greaves, and it's an all right shot. Nichols might want it again to maybe do better. I thought that might be a little bit harsh. More than that, there was nothing in it. And we kind of find ourselves saying a few times that we almost kind of caveat the fact, well, Hull, sat seventh or eighth in the league, out of the playoffs, I think, on goal difference. And it's been a very even half, but ultimate stage in the season, we can't continue saying that. We actually need to be getting points out of these games. But that said, I think, if the game would have come after a 4 week, I would have fancied us to get something out of it. I didn't think Hull were all that, in all honesty.
Killer, Johnny's mentioned it there, but the time wasting from Hull was pretty bad, wasn't it? I mean, the feigning of injury, the going down. I mean, I think when you're in the away end, you look at that as the perfect away performance, don't you? Sort of wind up the crowd, get a goal up, wind the clock down, slow the game down. I mean, the goalkeeper should have been booked two or three times. I mean, they were doing it from the 20th minute, weren't they? Wasting time from goal kicks. And the referee never got to grips with any of the time wasting. And it was 7 minutes added on. I've never seen 7 minutes added on for all of it was from time wasting at the, you know, during the first half. I mean, you could say the referee never got to grips with it, you know, in terms of warning, but at least she, you know, stopped the clock, if you like, even though we never did anything with it. But it's so frustrating, especially when but it's perfect, isn't it, Killer? If you're playing a team that press and harass and are at, you know, and try and play at 100 miles an hour, slowing the game down and really getting under their skin and getting under the crowd's skin is just the perfect sort of way to play it, isn't it? To be credit, you know, we sort of not demonizing Hull, if you like. They've come and played a particular brand of football. They're good on the ball, but they know how to manage a game as well. And they'd sort of managed us that first half just by pissing us off, really, didn't they?
Yeah, if we did that away from home, we're all celebrating it, thinking it's exactly the right thing to do. And maybe at Southampton, there were elements in that game where I thought we should have done it more than we did. Instead, we kept going full speed and ultimately paid the price for it. I thought Hull were fantastic. Not in the way that they played. It wasn't like they were going to batter us 3-4-0, but you could see, Matt, for the first time in John Worthington's kind of spell, a team came to play us with a game plan to beat us. And now we've played, who have we had before? The Sheffield Wednesday, they just had to win. And once we got ourselves in front, they couldn't chase the game back. Southampton play their own way. Then we have Sunderland, again, we're going to get onto in a bit, midweek, who kind of just played their own way. And first time we played them this season under Darren Moore, we looked too good for them. I don't know why we're just a team that seems to do well against them and the way they want to play. But Hull, to me, they kind of attacked in a way that we normally attack. And they got the ball at the back. They were passing it around quite nicely. We don't do that. But they persisted with it. Even when we were pressing high, and they were a little bit sloppy a couple of times, but they stayed at it. But then they transitioned really quickly to the front, to the final third. There wasn't too much in the midfield. When they went forward, Morton and Slater kind of held back a little bit so they could let Philogene and Zarauri get forward. And I thought they put in a perfect away performance, as you said, Matt. And whilst that first half was tight, I just felt like they were controlling the moments, the flow of the game. It didn't feel like we were in it. Oh, yeah, I think that extra day rest, like Johnny said, I think that's really, really important in it. But this is what happens in championship level football, at professional football. After you've shown your hand a little bit and you play the system you want to play, teams start breaking you down and they try and find your weaknesses. I think that's why Pearson had a bit of a bad day. He's not a right back, but he can do a job there. And in moments, it works. The problem is he's got distinct weaknesses as a fullback because he's not fast enough. And I think he were made to pay for it in the game against Hull. But it's just that they came to beat us and they came and played in a way that we couldn't break them down. And again, it wasn't a game where we could break fast in that first half. And all of a sudden, we didn't look like we were going to score a goal again. It looked like we couldn't create chances again. And that's because Hull gave us the respect that I think no one else has really given us recently under Worthy. And we just didn't have the answers for it. I think the selection of the midfield, Johnny Yeo coming back in, to me, didn't work. I thought it was the wrong thing to do, especially considering how well Kasumu has been playing and how important I feel he is when he gets the ball turned and drives it forward 10, 15 yards just to create space for everybody else. Johnny Ogg's great in certain situations, but he doesn't offer that. And I felt it just was quite pedestrian in that first half because of it. They set up in a way that they were, say, asking us to try and find a way to break them down. We couldn't. And we didn't have the players in the midfield that I thought could. I thought Rodoni in the first half was quite poor. I know it got better in the second half, but they were just people all over the pitch losing their one-on-one battles. And now that's not happened the last couple of games for Town. Normally we've kind of, Sauber Thomas wins his every time, yes. But apart from that, it just felt like we didn't have the flow of the game and the Hull did. And it's just new for us to feel that way after a few games where we've had it.
I've got some similar comments that I made, but mostly in the second half. I thought second half Town played quite well. But they played quite well without being massively threatening at the same time. Sauber Thomas was great, I thought, in that second half. I'll be honest, I prefer him down the right-hand side because I think his delivery suffers, or the quality of his delivery suffers if he's on the left. But, you know, he kind of came back and cut inside and hit those in-swingers, didn't he? Or that sort of arcing ball to the far post, which went out of play a couple of times is much better for me, sort of down the right. But I could understand why they played the way they did. They had Ryan Giles, didn't they, on the left back, and they had Radoni tracking as well, like they did with Jack Clark during the week, and it worked during the week with what we did. And on the other side, you know, of Sauber was, you know, on the right back who didn't get forward as much, but he had the beating of him as well. I think he would have had the beating of the other guy, but I think Philogene was a worry as well. Because of his pace, you know, Brody Spencer did a good job, but Sauber's quick as well. So, you know, that's really sort of, I think, why they've played it that way. But Sauber, four dribbles past his man, which I thought was quite good. Unfortunately, I think Caroma wasn't really as effective in this game as he has been in previous week. And I think the reason for that is the two centre-backs at Hull. I thought they both played really well. Jacob Greaves is obviously very highly rated, and he had a very good game. Alfie Jones also had a really good game. You know, that header that Alfie Jones did for the goal, I thought was really clever. You know, that the header back to Greaves on the first goal, I thought that was a really smart piece of football, to be honest. But they played really well, and they just kept us at arm's length, and they managed to let us shoot where they didn't think it was threatening, no chances really came in an area where we could hurt them. So I think, again, going back to Hull's game management, I think they managed that quite well. But I thought we were the better side, if you like, in the second half. I didn't really think Hull offered anything at all, really. But they were winning, so that I guess they didn't really have to. But apart from Philogene hit the post, didn't he? Which I had no idea how that went out for a goal kick on the other side after it hits the post. The spin on it must have been incredible. Sauber Thomas hit the post for us from a deflection as well. And it wasn't really until Bergzorg came on that we started to open them a little bit. And Bergzorg's a completely different threat to Caroma, isn't he? Because he's got height and he's got the strength, you know, that sort of that pace. And Bergzorg's so quick with the ball, isn't he? You know, running with the ball. He's you know, no one knows what he's going to do. And he almost cost us during the week against Sunderland, didn't he? But I love watching Bergzorg just because he's so random and so different. And he kind of opened the game up. And when we got that goal from Radoni, I just thought it was deserved. And had the final whistle gone then, everyone goes home and goes, you know what, it's a decent game. We weren't at it first half, but we've come back, got a point, and we've emptied the tank in the second half and really, really done all we can to get back in the game and get something. And I think that would have been the perfect ending. I think Hull deserved the point. I think we deserved the point. And then that's it. But a massive kick in the bollocks just after that, which is the second one they've given us this week. Hull, the Rochambeau champions of the championship in 23-24. I mean, I didn't really think it was a free kick, to be honest. I haven't seen it back, but in time, I thought the referee at the end made two really poor decisions with the free kicks that were given. I think the one on the Radoni, the one that she gave against Radoni was nonsense. But I mean, they put the ball in the box, and it's again the second phase of a set piece, isn't it? And it's come out, and we've looked a little bit at disarray in terms of marking, and Jack Radoni's on Greaves, the danger man, and that just seemed a little bit. It just seemed like the wrong man for the wrong job. You know, Jack Radoni's all right in the air, isn't he? But Jacob Greaves is one of the best headers of the ball in the league. You know, he's an absolute threat from set pieces. You want either Balker or Tom Lees, really, don't you, with him at that point? But, you know, and we got the kick in the balls, and it's it was really deflating, because I think what was real, when that happened at their place under Darren Moore, you just sort of sat there and you thought, do you know what? They've scored in the 95th minute. You were a rag-ass goal again. And you just thought, do you know what? We probably deserve that. We probably deserve to lose that game, because we just sat back and got deeper and deeper, and Hull came at us. This one, I don't think Hull deserved it, but they came out and they managed the game well in large parts. And then they put a good ball in the box, and Greaves puts a good header in the net. And you kind of just leave in thinking, they're all right, Hull, actually, but God damn it, killer.
I just, like you say, when you work so hard to get back into it, there was a good... The final 30 minutes, we chucked everything at it, didn't we? We were really trying to get back in that game. And then Radoni's shot, it's a bit of a lucky goal in that it goes through like four guys to go in the back of the net. And at that point, you're thinking, oh, do you know what? It's with us. The football gods are with us. We're going to take a point here. I'll disagree a little bit, Matt. I thought Hull probably deserved to win it. I know it's hard to win away games, I get it. And I just thought some of the players, like Philogene and Cavallo, like I don't even know why they're in the Championship, to be honest. They shouldn't be in this division. They are class on the ball. You can see they're ready to take that next step up, can't you? And it's quite surprising that they're here. And, well, to be honest, Hull's entire use of the loan market's wonderful, isn't it, this year? I think they've got Ryan Giles in from Luton. They've got, like, five of the starters yesterday were loan guys, whereas we've got Tom Edwards. And, okay, Bergzorg should have probably started for me yesterday. That was another point there,
Matos,
I thought.
Matos was decent.
And Matos, yeah, but he looked tired a bit yesterday, I thought. I feel like there was a distinct play by Hull yesterday to keep the ball away from Matos. So when they were transitioning, if you look, they kind of kept it away from Matos as much as they could because they know he flies in. He's the best guy we've got at it. And they tried to target where Johnny Ogg was because Matos is just so quick at stopping it in the passing lanes. Hull stayed away from it and I thought it was quite smart as well. But I think Bergzorg quickly, if he would have started yesterday, it'd been another different game. I feel his pace is what gives our front three that extra dimension. I love Caroma. I think he's great, but he has to work very hard as a striker. He throws his body into everything. He presses hard. And three games in a week again for him, it's just a tough ask. And I thought as Delano came on, that's really when we kind of stepped it up. But like you say, when you get back to 1-0 with 2 minutes to go, 2.5 minutes to go, you just think, are you going to hold on here? You're at home. I think Sauber Thomas runs to get the ball out of the net. So we should probably point that out in that we're trying to push for the win. But then,
the free kick gets given away because Kasumu goes flying in, doesn't he, to win the ball back to try and get forward. Yeah, and you can.
I'm all for the gamble. I'm all for that gamble. But like you say, Matt, the marking from that second phase from the free kick is horrific. It's awful. If you actually look back, Pearson and I think, is it Pearson and Lee? I don't know if they weren't up. Yeah, Pearson and Lee's at that point. They're just not following the men. There's Hull guys all over the place. Radone is his man at the end that puts it in Greaves, but there's just so many bodies in the box from Hull and Town guys. Again, to me, it's because they're tired, Matt. You've worked so hard to get back into the game. You've done it. You've had three games in a week. You think you're there and you just switch off for that second. The ball in's fantastic, by the way. It's an amazing cross because if a Town player gets on the end of it, there's a chance of an own goal. Tom Lee's probably got quite a bit of form for it. You know, he did it again, didn't he? But it's just one of those crosses. You put it in and if anyone gets anything on it, it's in. It's just like you say, that sucker punch. And it's not the way you want John Worthington's kind of little tenure to end with us, really, because he deserved better than that. We kind of deserved... Well, we've earned the point really for me yesterday, and then we've just kind of thrown it away by switching off. And I understand why we've done it because it's been a tough week, but it's not nice leaving the ground after it, is it? It's like you say, I'm saying with Johnny, I'd rather lose 1-0 and go, right, we tried it, we missed out, it didn't work, but at least we had a go. The only thing I did think was really good about yesterday was even though we've lost, it felt like a proper Championship game where we've not been outclassed. And now we've had many, many games where it feels like we're miles away from the team that beats us. Whereas it felt like Hull scored early. They put a good away performance in. We did what we could to get back into it. We got back into it and threw it away at the end, yeah. But it felt like we're at that level. They've got players to me that are better than our individuals, bar Sauber. But it was just nice to see a game where we're competitive and we're not scared of losing. And it's just nice to see it. I feel like on another day we walk away with a 1-1 draw and everyone's happy enough with it. It's just a shame and just a bit of a sour taste in the mouth that they've just managed to nick it in that last moment with us switching off.
Go on, Johnny, you round up that second half as well from your perspective.
Yeah, I will do. And I'll kind of might segue a little bit into the next agenda point. I think the key for me in the second half was, we've touched on it before, the selection, certainly in the midfield. But for me, I was quite surprised when we watched them play as well at half-time that wasn't anyone kind of looking to make a change. The first half was so pedestrian. And I think I didn't think in that game we necessarily needed Hogg and Matos both on the pitch, given where we were. So, I mean, we knew we were 1-0 down. We knew we had plenty of time to try and change it round or kind of take a bit more emphasis on the game. The fact we weren't 1-0 down, they weren't looking to sit. They didn't necessarily come at us. They weren't necessarily looking to sit massively, but we had no impetus to try and like change it from an attacking perspective. I just felt that it seemed obvious that something needed to change. And for me, it was kind of removing Hoggy out of that team. When the subs kind of came up, and it was Wiles and Matos that got pulled. Again, I think during Matos was slightly removed from the game. Killer's point, I think, is absolutely bang on that. And I don't know from a fitness perspective. Do you know, he might have had a little bit less in his legs, I'm not sure. But I think Hoggy hadn't had a great first half. And I think in that game, he probably should have been pulled earlier. I'm also not too sure where Bojan is in regards to where he is near the first team. But ultimately, again, I think if you're trying to keep... I know Wiles wasn't necessarily amazing, but he has done okay in the kind of the previous games. So I think he's trying to win that game. Bring Kasuma on, completely agree with that. Like, he brings a bit more impetus. You don't need Hogg Kasuma both on the pitch when you're kind of 1-0 down in the game. You're looking to kind of change it around. Bergsall was massive, absolutely. But I still feel that we lacked that central focal point. We've got two strikers on the bench. One I'd probably look to start over the or play sooner or bring on the pitch sooner than the other. I mean, it looked to make that change to the 76th minute when we eventually removed Hogg. Now, I don't know whether Worthington wanted to do that, but a bit of a block thinking, given, I don't know, a little bit of imposter syndrome where he is in his kind of first team managerial experience, which is kind of like game number four, where he's also looking to take on, I mean, a 10-year, 11-year club legend. He's sat on the pitch thinking, well, can I take him at half-time? Can I take him at 60? Is his end brain of taking him at 76? Is a little bit of that playing into there, which is fair enough. Understand that. I mean, Brighton right, they might have made a different decision. Now he's actually given the manager position. But I do think that second half, we didn't give ourselves the best opportunity we could have done based on the players that we had to actually use. And ultimately, I've said about Diarra there, and he did get assists from Radoni, but which he might turn around and say is a reasonable argument why he should have played. But I do think there was things that we could have done, things that we could have changed to kind of give ourselves a better shot in that second half. And I just was sat on the side frustrated that they weren't done, really, to be honest.
Yeah, I didn't really get the Diarra sub, I'll be honest. That Diarra's never really come off the bench and changed a game. He's one of those where he starts and he's better when he starts than he is when he comes off the bench, and he's never really turned a game. But Danny Ward as well, I mean, when you're putting crosses in the box, Danny Ward's not bad in the air, to be fair. He's all right, isn't he? He's quite deceptively quite good in the air. But Bojan Radulovic is, you know, from what we're led to believe, is decent, you know, at scoring with his head. So when the crosses were coming in, I was sat there thinking maybe he'll bring Bojan on and, you know, put Bergsorg, you know, sort of wide right or wide left and Sauber, you know, and then you've got your three-pronged attack there. But I mean, I understand why he put Ward on, because Ward is good at the press and that we're trying to play on the front foot and you know, and sort of shut the opposition down. And Ward is quite good at that. I mean, he's not fit at the minute. You can tell he's not match fit. So, you know, he wasn't as good as that as what it is. But, you know, I can't really knock John Worthington because he's done a really good job, you know, in a short space of time. So it's just one of those, isn't it? Whereby if Diarra comes on and he gets that assist and Radoni, you know, he gets the assist and Radoni scores and it ends 1-1, we probably sat here going, do you know what? Great sub Worthy, you know what I mean? He got the assist. So it's just, you know, it's just the way it is, isn't it? But what did you think, guys? I mean, I'm sort of giving him a pass, to be honest. Tried something, didn't work. At least he tried something. That's where I am with that.
Nah, I'm with Johnny a little bit. I expect, I know it's only been four games and he's very inexperienced, Worthington, of course he is. But I also thought the substitutions weren't on point against Hull. And I feel that the same thing happened against Southampton. We spoke about in-game management there. I thought was quite lacking and we didn't adjust when we were back to 3-2, but you could tell we were tired. We spoke about, Matt, you and I, a week ago about giving Worthington these two games and then kind of, we didn't know Brighton Wright was coming in at that point, of course, and we kind of make a judgment then on whether he could be the guy to lead us to the end of the season. And now for me, just seeing the lack of experience probably in being able to change games at the end of games, and maybe it is like Johnny said that it's Johnny Ogg, so you kind of, you're only a caretaker manager. You've got to be in there with him next week when you're not manager anymore and you keep people happy or whatever. Maybe that's come into it a little bit. But to me, just seeing the lack of adjustments that I think really could have helped us in regards to substitutions has kind of, I'm stepping back a little bit and thinking he would have been the right guy to see us to the end of the season. And now if we'd won both these games, it's a different thing. But I just feel like you can see he's pretty raw still as a coach. And he didn't make those adjustments. But quickly on Bojan Radulovic, if that's not a game for him to come on and show what he can do, I don't know what a game is, because normally we're playing counter-attacking football and fast football and breaking away quick and trying to find Bergsorg over the last man and just one-on-one it kind of thing. Whereas against Hull, in that final 30 minutes, we're pressed right up the field. You're looking for nice intricate footworks to break them down. And that to me is what Radulovic offers. And on everything I've seen on YouTube and stuff, that's kind of his game. But Worthington thought he wasn't the right thing for him, which I found quite surprising. And again, I'd have started Delano Bergsorg, but then unfortunately, I think he got injured as well at the end of the game. I think he was hobbling around for the last 5 to 10 minutes from a whack he took. So I think that's going to be a bit of an issue going into next week. But I just thought the substitutions were like you say, confusing. And if we get a 1-1 draw, Matt, you're right. We're probably thinking, well, he got it bang on. Don't matter. But I just think he just shows that he's not got that experience just yet. And we're going into a new era, of course, from Monday. And it's not so much of a concern anymore. But he did a fantastic job with the time he was here.
Just to round out on the Diarra point, Cocon just kind of said, I don't think he should have been brought on and he got the assist. There's a lot of things I think Diarra needs to work on his game. But really, the assist, it is a good little bit of a run. But he does play a 2-yard pass to Radoni. Mm. And then there's a hell of a lot happens before it goes in the back of the net. So I wouldn't be like shouting about my assist too much. But he did get the assist. Okay. So as the stats show, he can understand the point on that one.
Yeah, all counts. Yeah, I'd have had Radulovic on for 20 minutes towards the end because the balls were coming into the box. But, you know, it is what it is. Right, I think what we'll do is we will take a short break and we'll be back momentarily. You can listen to me and Cozzy try and flog you NordVPN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cozzy, what's your favourite away day?
Matt, it's got to be the City Ground at Nottingham. Just old-school stadium, you're right near the pitch, great atmosphere. But there's nothing like playing at home. Same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You win. Order now on the McDonald's app.
At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Okay, right, boys. There's a second game that we've got to get through and we can be a bit happier about this one, I reckon. Town 1, Sunderland 0. Really good performance, I thought, this, especially for the first 65 minutes. Really high octane, pulsating, any buzzwords you want to throw at this. I really enjoyed it. Valentine's Day, much better to spend it with my mate Tom than with the missus. The missus, actually, she was going to come and then she bottled it last minute, said it was too cold. But there we go. My main worry when I saw the team selection was Matty Pearson versus Jack Clark. I was thinking, oh God, Jack Clark's quick, you know what I mean, and skillful. Matty Pearson is not the quickest. But Matty Pearson absolutely murdered Jack Clark. I thought it was magnificent. For every, you know, we've kind of said he didn't play very well against Hull. But for how he didn't play that well against Hull, Matty Pearson was awesome against Sunderland. He was absolutely unreal, wasn't he? He absolutely smashed Jack Clark into next week. And he was ably supported by Jack Radoni tracking back as well to double up on him when needed as well at times. Really good performance from him. Brady Spencer be happy with that. Brody Spencer as well on the other side was top class as well. You know, the fullbacks, and to be honest, Brody's not really a left back, and Matty Pearson's not really a right back, so they're kind of a little bit square pegs out the round, almost square pegs round holes, aren't they? But they both did really well, and Balker, I thought, was excellent as well in the middle of defence. He was really excellent on the cover, playing the ball out from the back, and he was decent against Hull as well for me. But let's look at the midfield as well. The midfield was really where it all came from for me, Killer, and you touched on it earlier with in the Hull game. It was Matos and Kasumu in midfield, and the energy that they brought to the midfield just absolutely strangled Sunderland, really, and made sure that they didn't have any space whatsoever in midfield. And it just allowed us to get on top of the game. And we drove forward really well, you know, from midfield. Both of them do it really well. Matos and Kasuma just carry that ball a little bit. Radoni carries the ball quite well. And Ben Wiles as well. You know, it was just a good performance, wasn't it? And you sat there and it was just enjoyable. And even the free kick was something different as well that we'd not seen before, wasn't it? It's just, you know, the little work free kick, Radoni shoots and the keeper pushes it into an area whereby he probably shouldn't. And Matty Pearson just bundles it in with his thigh, doesn't he? And it's quite a nice Valentine's Day, Johnny.
Yeah, well, it's just weird. Sorry, Johnny. It's just weird when we have a comfortable win. Because when do we ever have a comfortable win? Yet that game from the start, it was more like we just wanted it more. It was just like that we wanted to go at it, and Sunderland just weren't ready for it, and they just didn't expect us to do it in that way. Matty Pearson looked fantastic at right back, Matt, but that's probably why he was pretty poor against Hull, because it's a tough job marking Jack. It is, isn't it? That's not an easy role whatsoever. But he went at it, and he just again one on one battle, one v ones. We had it, and in midfield, like you say, Matt, the pace in which we kind of broke forward, Sunderland were panicking all the time in defence, trying to just work at readjust and try and counter what we were trying to throw at them, and they just couldn't live with it. And like you say, for the free kick, even when Caroma plays it into Radone, they don't move because they just think Sauber Thomas is taking it. No one moves. The goalie sees it late and he's just palmed it into Matty Pearson's inner thigh by the look of it. But it's just when you have a routine win like that, we don't get routine wins like that. That's not a Huddersfield Town thing to do, is it? That's just not happened for years. So when you can see from the first moment, it just felt comfortable. And Matt, you're right, first 65 minutes looked really good and we dropped off a little bit, but you expect that. You've got to expect that. You're 1-0 up. They're going to throw something at you. But it just felt like we deserved to win the game from the first minute. And it didn't feel like an over-exuberation when we did win in the end. It was more like, nah, do you know what? We're at it. This is the level we can play at, and we're good enough to win against pretty much anyone if we get it right.
I think it's the exact word I'd use there. It was comfortable. I mean, I think inherently as a Town fan, certainly where we are on the table, but definitely as a Town fan, if you sat at 1-0, you are low-key just anxious throughout the most of the game. I think Dave Carmichael put on Twitter that can't cope with too many games like that. But ultimately, that worry was never really warranted because nothing really came from Sunderland. I was a little bit surprised, really, because to look at Hull, Sunderland equally have got some quality players in the ranks, players that, do you mean, on paper, you might look and think you'd want to bring into Town's team, certainly. Nothing really came. I think that's down to the good work that Town did. Equally, I think some of Sunderland's players are a little bit uninterested and they've got their own issues, aren't they, to a certain extent. But it was largely down to everyone stuck to the task. The game plan worked really well. We understood where our strengths were. We understood equally where we could hurt Sunderland, but we saw where Sunderland can hurt us. And like I said, the likes of Matt Pearson and Kasumu, certainly on that side, did a fantastic job against Clark. I think worked really, really well with Pearson being the first point of attack, getting close to him, not letting him turn. If there was one a few times he did show a little bit too much side on and Clark got round a bit, again, we were quick on to close that down and nullify any of the attacks as well. One thing that's interesting, I've just got the stats in front of me. One of the most disappointing things that I thought of from Sunderland's perspective, I was quite interested to see Joe Bellingham play. I've not seen him play before. And I thought he was really, really poor, but he's got a 7.5 on Flash Score, which is interesting. So I must have missed something with that performance. But no, I certainly don't think there was too much to worry. And again, using it as a yardstick, looking at teams that are pushing and pushing certainly way above where we are on the table, it does show that, do you know what I mean, playing, if we play to our best, we can compete. And again, that's a team I'd look to play. I'd probably look to kind of maybe move Radoni into the middle and bring Birdsog onto one of the wings and maybe swap the striker. But it showed to me if we look to do that and play like that and get that kind of dynamism in midfield with Matos and Kasumu, we can not just look to counter teams but actually control games and challenge teams as well.
Stats are a bit weird because Jack Clark's... I use whoscored.com and Jack Clark was Sunderland's highest rated player on whoscored.com, but Matty Pearson was our highest rated player. So it's quite strange. You know, usually you expect one to significantly outweigh the other, but never mind. But Brody Spencer got a good 7.5 and Barr got a 6.1 on his opposing man. So, and Joe Bellingham got 7.1. I didn't really notice much from him. I thought it was okay, but nothing amazing. But, you know, there we go. Killer. Just Josh Caroma in this game, you know, leading the line by himself. We've spoke about him before, haven't we? There's little things that he does really well, you know, how he sort of drops off, doesn't he, and links play quite well, and little things that you don't expect. And every now and then, I think back to something I said years ago when he first sort of broke through with Carlos Corbrand, and I was like, there could be shades of Ollie Watkins in Josh Caroma in some of the things that he does and how he could potentially go through the middle rather than wide. I mean, that's never really happened, has it, in terms of, you know, that sort of all-round player, but because he kind of goes one way, doesn't he, most of the time. But he does put performances in up front where you do think, do you know what, he's actually decent there, and he's not just a left winger who cuts in and shoots. He can, you know, run the channels, you know, get down the channels. He's quite quick, isn't he? He's quite deceptively quick, I think, Josh Koroma at times. And he just drops into those little pockets, doesn't he? And links play quite well. It's just whether he sort of fancies it sometimes. Sometimes his body language can be a little bit mardy, can't he? But, you know, under John Worthington, he's been far more good than he has bad.
Do you think he compares a little bit to when Danny Ward transitioned from a winger to a striker, Matt?
Yeah, possibly. Possibly.
Now, not Danny Ward as today, because obviously he's a little bit older and his game's changed a little bit. But when he first transitioned, it was a similar thing, I thought. I love Josh Koroma. I think he's, bar and Bergsorg, the most effective striker we have. He wins everything in the air, and he's a smart. He's not tall, but he can jump. He can jump, and he fights. His press is clever. He never lets the defence play out easily. He always makes it hard for them. And he's always showing, if a midfielder's got the ball, Koroma drops in as kind of like a false nine and just opens it up for Sorba Thomas or Radone. And to me, even as of today, unless Healy, because we've not seen too much of him, if everybody's fit, there's games to me where I'd have Koroma starting as that nine still. Sheffield Wednesday, it changed the game when Healy and Radulovic went off injured. Koroma goes up top, gives Sheffield Wednesday centre-backs a torrid time after they had possibly the easiest game they could have had for the first 45 minutes until the injuries occurred. I love him. I think he's a fantastic striker. And down the middle, when he gets those one-on-one chances, and yeah, he's missed a couple this season, funnily enough, but generally you've got a bit of faith he's going to pop it away. And you know, when he just cuts in and opens up, you know it's going to go really close. He is an underrated striker. I'm just quite surprised whenever he's gone out on loan. Where's he been? He went to Portsmouth and it didn't quite work out for him. Did he go to Rotherham as well, Matt? Where else? Is he just
Portsmouth? Went to Rotherham where the Cowleys were here, didn't he? And then he kind of broke through and he looked good, and then he got that hamstring injury, and then he came back and looked quite good. And then that season where we were good, he was just very inconsistent, wasn't he? He scored a couple of goals, and there was the Stoke incident where he probably should have been sent off, and he just kind of found himself a little bit out of the team, and he got linked with Bournemouth and Forest randomly, didn't he? And the January transfer window, and he ended up latterly going to Portsmouth on loan, where he didn't really pull up trees, did he?
Which is strange, though. But he's a streaky player, and he's a form winger, a form striker to me. When he's in and he's on it, for some reason he just scores goals after goal after goal. But then when he's not off it, like when Calgary, he was fantastic. He had a spell where he was great under them and Corbett. But then he has like months where he's just non-existent. And I think, look, we're a championship club, and that's what you get with players. If somebody's fantastic 100% of the time, they're not with you very long. They move on. The guys that you keep for those 4 or 5 seasons are the guys that are a bit up and down when it comes to form. But Koroma, in this press system that Johnny Worthington liked, was definitely the most effective striker we had available to us. And the Sheffield Wednesday game alone, he's won us 3 points for me, because that changed the dynamics of that entire game. And as of today, if we wouldn't have won that game, we'd have been in a very perilous situation when it came to the relegation zone. So Chrome has been great. And that conch will get some use, I think, Matt, between now and the end of the season. Because he's crucial to our chances of staying up, depending on what Andre's gonna play going forward. But he's just a clever striker. He's not the fastest, but he's fast enough. He's not the tallest, but he's tall enough. But he challenges for everything. And there's a real use for him.
Yeah, Josh Koroma, this is for you. There you go. The Viking Warhorn. Johnny, I mean, 3 points from 6, do we think that's... I think we probably would have wanted 4. I think 4 points would have been, you know, quite happy with that. 3 points from 6 is kind of okay, I think, in the situation we're in. But it's getting a bit tight down there with Sheffield Wednesday won't go away, and QPR as well, unfortunately. Rotherham have gone away. I think we can almost say, I don't really want to come across like them from the second tier podcast, but we can almost sort of relegate Rotherham. They're dropping further and further behind, aren't they? But Sheffield Wednesday haven't given up. QPR definitely haven't given up, and Millwall are in a bit of a state. Swansea won at Hull, didn't they? If Swansea hadn't have won at Hull the other week, they'd be right down here with us. And Blackburn are kind of flagging again. They won, didn't they, on the first game under Eustace, and then lost and kind of in and out a little bit. There's a lot going on down at the bottom now, and I think it's a bit of a credit to us, QPR and Sheffield Wednesday, that we've drawn the others back in. And I think you look from, again, we said this last week, but you look from 15th down now, and there's two teams from 7 or 8, 9 there. That's gonna drop, and it's a little nervy, isn't it? And we're still in this run of difficult games. I mean, we've got Watford away is difficult next week, but not impossible. We've got the Chesties the week after, which is a very difficult game, and then hopefully, as March progresses, it starts to wear off. But that's, again, that comes with its own dangers, because you're then playing teams who have something to play for. We've got Millwall, haven't we, and a couple of the other teams. Maybe Birmingham might still be in and around, but they beat Sunderland, didn't they? They turned it around. So it's getting really interesting, isn't it, down there? I mean, but it's good in a way that it's not just the four that everybody looked at. I mean, I went on TalkSport 2 about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and the QPR, before the QPR game, the QPR fan sort of said, no, it's definitely going to be 3 from 4. And I was like, I don't think so, because Reading last year dropped in from nowhere, mainly due to the FFP issues. There's always someone that drops in from nowhere. This drops like a stone at the wrong time. And it's just, I look at it now and I couldn't call it, because, you know, it could be that us, QPR and Sheffield Wednesday all survive and two others just randomly drop in. And I suppose this is why the Championship is the best league to follow, isn't it?
It is. And I've got a few close friends who are sat at the wrong end of the Premier League who are quite excited to come back and rejoin the Championship. So yeah, they'll echo your thoughts as well. But going back to what you said at the beginning there, is 3 points good? Is 4 points good? I still class 3 points as good just because of who we've played. I feel, again, prior to, I mean, the worthy resurgence under Moore and how we've gone before, we could have easily lost both games, which would have been disastrous, but I think was very, very feasible to have happened. I don't think you'd be too creative to say that that wasn't the case. So to look in that perspective and to win one and to obviously lose the other isn't the worst case, but then you've also got to look at factoring where we are in real-world situation. We're at the point where we do need to be collecting points in home games, given the run we've got, as you alluded to, the ones we need to target. So I think 4 would have been fantastic. 4 would have been really, really good. I think 3 probably is, like you say, probably is just okay, probably is just par. But as we stand, we've regressed in regards to the table. So, I mean, we've not got further away from the drop. So even though the results have been going well, ultimately the main thing that matters is that red line, isn't it? But the 22, and the fact we're now 2 points above it, where, do you know what I mean, over the couple of previous games, we've always been more than that, at 1.4 or 5. It is a little bit of cause for concern. Positives being, like you say, the fact we're not 21st anymore, which I think we should have actually had a bit of a celebration on, because that's been a long time. But it's, we're not 21st. We've sucked Millwall in. Yeah, we've sucked Millwall in, who I think have kind of become that team that you're alluding to there, because obviously they sat around when they were, I don't know, but they were certainly around 15th, 16th. They weren't necessarily looking at relegation, and they've continued to go backwards, if not a little bit backwards, a little bit faster. So yeah, it is a case where each week, each game week, is going to look a little bit where it's going to swing, where we're kind of close to the pack above and maybe swing where we're a little bit close to the bottom. But at this point in time, I think it's not a bad situation to be that. Okay, being 2 points to the drop isn't great, but the fact there's a numbers game now, we've actually got people to target. Whereas last season, the situation we had was the fact that it was, do you know what I mean, 3 from 4. And if we weren't to 4th, there was nobody else going to be drawn into that. And I would always rather the situation where you've got teams around you where you can target them, or they're going to, you're looking at their game, see what they've done. If we get beat, someone else got beat. If we get a point, someone gets beat, we're closer. Do you know what I mean? 1 point off Stoke, 2 points off Swansea. So there's potential there as well. But like you say, with Watford and Leeds back to back, that's tough. I mean, you're really saying there, Watford, Leeds and Cardiff. Leeds, I spoke to a Leeds fan on Friday, who would take a point now. I think that's very friendly. I'd probably agree with him.
A point would be amazing. I think a point would be brilliant. They've won 6 games in a row, aren't they, away from home? They're absolutely on fire, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that actually puts down more to his mindset than Leeds' footballing ability. Watford's tough away from home. I know we did well last season, but that's going to be a tough one. Cardiff, I think, becomes an absolute must win. It really, really does. If I'm thinking we're going to get maybe a point at Watford, lose to Leeds, as much as it hurts me to say it, that Cardiff becomes a must win. Depending on what they do between now and then, start 4th, if we do beat them, we're going to go within 3 points of them. So that's potential drag someone else into the mix. But yeah, it is worrying. But I still think there's enough in that team, given, I mean, the quality we've got back on the bench. Going back to Killer's point on Berserk, hopefully he is fit, because he's a massive differential maker in that team. But you do have games coming up where you'll start to get teams becoming that kind of mid-table, on the beach style team. It's not like it was 10 years ago, but I mean, you can pick up points those kind of teams, and we do have teams like that we do play. We also play a lot of people in and around us as well. So I think our running isn't too bad, but I do think we've still got to be kind of picking up points, because unfortunately QPR are winning, and I mean Stoke and Swansea and Blackburn are going to pick up points, and they're not going to go on a run, which I think will mean that we don't need to continue to win games. So it is concerning. It is concerning that buffer is getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
I mean, we've got Watford away, which I think is one where we've got to go and get something. If I'm honest, we can't just turn up and play well and not get anything anymore. It's not, you know, that's not an option anymore. Leeds, I mean, if we could get a point, that'd be amazing, wouldn't it? Against a top three side. I mean, we drew with Southampton at home under Darren Moore, so you kind of fingers crossed. But the form that the top three are coming into now, and you're just thinking, oh, they're steamrolling people. Good sides. Cardiff are falling away slightly, so maybe there's a chance there. But then we've got West Brom at home on the 10th, and West Brom, I mean, they're very much like the Hull, you know, in the way that they play. We're probably tailor-made for them more than the other way around, which is difficult. Rotherham away, which becomes, like you say, that if we're not picking up points, that is a must win. And then we've got Coventry at home, and Coventry, I think, will probably take that last playoff spot. So that's difficult. And then comes Stoke, Millwall, Preston, Bristol City, Swansea, Birmingham, and Ipswich. Ipswich on the last day of the season. I mean, if both teams have to win for something, that's not going to be fun, is it? But hopefully we can get the results. I mean, Bristol City, Swansea, Birmingham, that's potentially what you mean, Johnny, isn't it? With, you know, that safe, can't go anywhere. Millwall as well on the 6th could be absolutely massive as well. So, I mean, we looked at it last year, didn't we? And we thought, oh, we're not going to win there, not going to win there. And then Neil Warnock performed absolute miracles in some of the performances that we got. So who knows what's going to happen, but strap yourselves in, because that's going to be a good ride. And the man behind the steering wheel will be Andre Brighton writer. A nightmare for people on social media to spell is this one. I mean, down at the Mac's going to have about... They struggled badly enough with Lee Clark, didn't they, back in the day? So this is going to be an interesting one. Me and the Juice, Brady, are going to put together a special on Andre Brighton Writer. We're just waiting for a couple of journalists from Germany to come back to us. So we'll put something together, knock that out, so to speak. So I don't really want to go too deep on him here, because we've got something particular coming up. But I think you have to give a lot of credit to Kevin Nagel and the town hierarchy, because this is a pretty ambitious and exciting appointment, I think. But before we go into Andre Brighton, right, I think what we should do is we should say that Sunderland was a really good night for John Worthington, a really sort of fitting night for someone. And I think the best credit I could give John Worthington is that he's made town fans enjoy watching the team again. And he's done it by getting the team to play as like he did as a player. You know, the team full of energy when fit, you know, the press hard, fearless, and they give it everything. And I think John Worthington is a real feather in the cap of Huddersfield Town, and having someone like him working hard in the background is great for the football club. So a big thanks and well done to Worthy, because he's made Huddersfield Town worth watching again. And that in itself is a really big thing for, you know, people like us. So well done, Worthy. But back to Brighton Writer. I mean, he only really has to carry on the work from Jonathan Worthington. And, you know, the style, I mean, you read about the style that he used at Zurich, that he used Paderborn and, you know, Schalke, etc. He's got a really interesting CV. It's a good CV, you know, top flight experience in two different countries. I'm looking forward to this. When Darren Moore was appointed, I was like, oh, no. Whereas this, I'm like, yeah, this could be a brilliant move. And it could be one of those strap yourselves in for the ride kind of things as well. Because he tends to, looking at his record, his average is about 15, 16 months somewhere. And he tends to sort of like take you on a bit of a ride and then it fizzles out a little bit, like David Wagner, you know, in some ways, you know, two or three of his clubs. But I think Town fans in particular are just tailor-made for the German style, you know, the up and at them, the gegenpressing and, you know, transitioning forward quickly, you know, all about fitness rather than individual skill, etc. And I mean, Killer, it just, like I say, Worthy's set the building blocks in place, hasn't he, with how we've been playing the last three or four games. We've now got a 50-year-old manager in who loves his Stone Island, doesn't he? So he's obviously going to fit in well around these parts. And I'm excited by this. I really am excited by this. I think you got to give credit, haven't you, to the Town board for being ambitious and trying something different at the stage of the season we're at is a little bit perilous almost, isn't it? But I think you've got to give him credit for going out there and getting someone with his CV and giving it a go and trying to put some excitement back in the club.
Well, that's what it is. It's excitement, Matt. I think if we'd have gone around the bush a little bit again and got another Championship manager that's done all right here, then a bit rubbish there, and he wouldn't have excited anybody. I think we've kind of had that with Darren Moore, and we just want... We've seen Johnny Worthington play his exciting brand of football, like you say, and all of a sudden we're like, right, that's what we want. We want that. That's what we could go out and get us that. You've got to... I've got to give full plaudits to Kevin Nagle. I wonder if it has been made easier by Neil Warnock finding employment elsewhere as well as Darren Moore very quickly, because I imagine there's a financial aspect when it comes to how much we are able to pay for a coach potentially if our previous coaches now have moved on, because obviously that changes sometimes how much we have to continue to pay for their contract.
Kevin Nagle said he's still got loads of ex-coaches on the wage bill, didn't he? I mean, when usually the deal is that you get paid your contract until you get another job, isn't it? And then, you know, you get another job. That seems to be how it works in the Premier League anyway, so. I don't see why.
But it's important to pay thanks, I guess, to Worthington for this as well. I think he's taken 6 points from his 12 possible points in charge of Town. And now I feel like if he didn't, well, first off, if we'd have still had Darren Moore, I think we'd have got two draws and two defeats instead of two wins and two defeats. We'd have been in the relegation zone. But if Johnny Worthington doesn't come in and gives us these extra wins to keep our heads above the red line, like you say, Johnny, I think this appointment's very different. And I think you might have had to go a little bit safer, right? This is a gamble. But for me, Matt, I don't know what it is for you, but it is the best appointment we've ever made on paper. If you're looking at the achievements of Andre Breitenreiter, as I'll go with the pronunciation, it's about as good as it can get. He's won things everywhere. He's achieved, and again, I won't go into too much because you and Brady will be doing, but he's achieved at not every club he's been at, but at a lot of different clubs in different situations, big clubs, Schalke, Paderborn and Zurich, he's done well. And now that translates really, really well when you're looking at coaches moving on to new jobs, because he's not just done it once in one league. Like David Wagner, for example, when he came here, he brought in, well, debatable who brought them in, but we brought in a German influx of players that they kind of knew of and this, and it works straight away. And now David Wagner's gone elsewhere and it's not worked as well, right? If you're looking on paper, this guy's done far more, he's achieved far more than anybody else we've ever had in recent modern history. And that alone gets me excited, man. We spoke about it. We wanted a foreign guy to come in and just change it up and have a go. We are a club that can't spend massively. This does actually signify to me that we might be willing to spend a little bit more in the summer. Maybe that's something else we can get onto later on. In that, I don't think he comes in unless we've got some sort of transfer budget. And seeing what Kevin put down in January, you kind of have that little thought that, you know what, we might be able to spend a little bit more than we expected. But it's just we're a smallish club in this division compared to some of the other clubs. And we have to overachieve for the money that we've got available to us when it comes to the playing squad. To achieve that, we've done it twice with Carlos Corberan and David Wagner that found a different way of playing that other teams in the Championship couldn't handle. We're trying to do the same thing again. And to me, that's the only way I think you can achieve with a club like Huddersfield in this division. I am as in on this as it's possible to be. I just hope, like you say, Matt, he represents the football the fans want to play, because in the stadium now, we lost against Hull. Yet the stadium didn't, I know it was a bit of a downer, but it still didn't feel the same as when we had Darren Moore in. The football didn't represent the kind of football we want. I feel like we will be getting that. And I can't wait for Watford. Straight away, I'm so invested again. And fair play to Kevin Nagle to go in to do it, because I didn't expect us to get a manager of the paper calibre of the one we've got.
Paperback Breitenreiter.
I'd absolutely agree. I think for the club, we touched on in a previous podcast, the fact that really they've made a a succession of errors when it's come to managers in either when they've hired them, who they've hired, and also when they've let them go. So I think from the club, they could have looked and thought, look, if we get this wrong, it's going to apply a lot of pressure, a lot of pressure, more so than they've kind of already got. I know January's eased that a little bit with the signs that we've made and also the money that we've spent, but still a lot of pressure. So to look at a Duff or someone like that ilk, they could kind of say, look, if we hire Duff and we go down, there's an argument or there's a narrative you can say, look, well, he's a reasonable manager. We kind of looked at him in the summer. He's the best we could have got, and he probably should have done the job as well. So no blame on us. Going left field, and if it doesn't work, not talking at Brighton Rider, but just generally going left field, you really are putting your neck on the line in the recent history we've had to get absolute pelters, because it's quite easy for them to go, why have you hired someone who's inexperienced in the Championship, never managed in English football before, never done a relegation battle, and the list goes on. So I do completely kind of echo what Killen and you have, Matt, said, that the credit does go to the club to recognise the situation. I'm sure they have done, but still thought, no, we're going to be brave. It's easier with the calibre manager that we've brought in, like I say, on paper, because it's probably higher than like equally I was expecting. But I do think credit should go to club for making that decision and still looking to be progressive. And Killer's absolutely right in what he says, that it's cheaper to get a high-quality, decent manager than it is to get 6 or 7 high-quality players, and it's the way we're going to have to operate. And there's good examples where we have done it, and we've kind of brought someone in who's kind of like given that extra 10, 20% rather than actually just recruiting player staff. So we've got examples where it has worked as well. But like I said, it is exciting. On paper, he's managed some big clubs that not even kind of football nerds will know, that you can point to and say, yeah, I recognise that, and that's quite a coup for Huddersfield Town. And the first thing I thought was exactly what Killer said there, so I'm not to repeat him again, but it does make me excited. I mean, when we stay up this season, what next season will look like? Because I don't think, I mean, there's nothing that attracts Brighton Riders to the club if it's not looking to progress, if it's not looking to kind of, I mean, put down some key recruitments, if he's not got control of that, if he's not kind of thinking, well, what are we looking to do, what are we looking to achieve? And he's too long in the tooth to kind of get a plan put forward in front of him and think, yeah, that's great, without kind of real substance to it as well. And I'm sure we'll have fact checked that. So it is a little bit exciting to what the future might hold as well. And it might be a little bit of a, like I say, a peek around the corner to that. But ultimately, for what we need right now, I think it works well. I think how we've been playing the last weeks fit is we're not looking to kind of come in and make a massive wholesale change in like a week on the training ground. We play completely different, radically different for Watford, because that wouldn't have worked equally. Like I said, this is not the time to do that. So I think in various ways, various lines of, does this fit? Is this good? Will it work for now and the future? I think it ticks a lot of boxes. But like I said, I don't want to sound too positive and everything start to quickly unravel. But I just say, yeah, I think, again, echo the praise of the club. And I think we put a poll out, didn't we? Are you happy with it? Are you not happy with it? I think it was 80% kind of positive, which, again, for a pool of Town fans to kind of vote that highly, it shows you're obviously doing something right.
Yeah, I asked, so we do have Town fans in Germany, believe it or not, who do listen to this podcast. And Mark, who has listened to us for years, I sent him a message on Twitter, and I sort of said, do you know much about Andre Brighton Writer? Because we're looking for people to sort of do voice notes for us for the one we're doing, Brady. And Mark sent a nice little message back that just said, I know him from his time at Schalke in Hanover, my German club as a fan. I celebrated the win of the DFB Pokal in 1992 with him as a player for Hanover, only team who wasn't in the Bundesliga when they won the cup. I really like him as a coach. He's calm with a clear plan, able to change things during the game. He doesn't bend under pressure. His interviews are not very interesting. He's not a charismatic person, but he clearly knows what he's doing and is a no-nonsense coach. I hope he adapts fast to English football, and his English football language skills should be all right. Bit Wagner-esque maybe, but that's it. So, yeah, that was enough to excite me anyway. I mean, when a German talks football, I mean, it might not be very exciting in Germany, but, you know, over here, we find it great, don't we? So it's probably far more exciting. But, you know, on the list of probability, we've gone with a left field appointment in Wagner. That was a success. Then left field one in Jan Sievert, which failed. Then one left field one in Corbrand, which was a success. A left field one in Fotheringham, which failed. And this left field one, hopefully, follows the same sort of theme and is a success. So That's the silly way that we're looking at things here. So Andrea Bryant via best of luck. Kevin Nagel did a diary as well and explained one or two things on there. I've not had a chance to watch that yet, but I will do a bit later. But I think they just sort of outlined from the bits I saw of it, he just sort of outlined that, you know, don't believe everything that you read from Alan Nixon, I think was one of the takeaways from that one. So fair enough. Just before we talk about our final subject, I just wanted to really say about the Blue and White Foundation do a half-term player signing every year or so. And I went with my little boy, Charlie, on Monday of this week, and he had an absolutely brilliant time. I just wanted to say that it was really, really good. And the club do certain things very, very well. And this was one of them. You know, you go around and you meet all the players. Boothy, who's an absolute gentleman and such a great guy, gives you a tour of the stadium and takes you around and you go in all the boxes. Dean Hoyle's boxes. Dean Hoyle's still got two boxes. There we go. So, but yeah, it was just a really good morning / early afternoon. And, you know, sort of the club, the things that the club do to keep the community well. And Charlie's gone from sort of not really being that bothered to just for coming away buzzing, thinking that was amazing and talking about all the different players, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really good to kind of make that bond and connection, you know, for young fans. So, you know, brilliant. Well done to the club. It was a really good day. And thank you very much for the experience that we had. And the people there that did it were really good, really nice as well. Shame we didn't win anything in the raffle because it cost me a fortune in the club shop afterwards, but never mind. Right. The last thing, Fothers is back in the news. Killer, you wanted to speak to this, speak about this in particular. So listen, Mark Fotheringham has been in the Scottish Sun. It says, mark my words, I was a Bundesliga success, but never got my SPFLs. Never got my SPFL chance. Even Jurgen Klinsmann thinks I could do a job here. And then he goes on about his stellar coaching CV. I mean, his German CV is not bad, in fairness. He's just, Fothers has just been relieved of his duties with Jurgen Klinsmann of South Korea, where they didn't do very well in the Asia Cup, did they? But he's pretty much bemoaning not getting a call for the Aberdeen, Hibs and Hearts jobs. But the bit which I think grabs everybody's attention is the bit of what he says about Huddersfield. He goes on about his German experience. Okay, you know, he seems to have done quite well over there. And then he's gone, I've worked at championship level with Huddersfield and I was sacked, but I'll stand by my record, especially the win rate compared with those who followed. I mean, Neil Warnock dug him out of the shit, didn't he, pretty much at the end of that season. I'm not sure that the very comparable. Killer looks like he's...
I just don't get it. I just can't believe it. No, I'm not pulling... I'm not, no, because the better one...
I can't believe he said that with a straight face.
No, and then he says, it's incredible. Away from Scotland, I'm extremely well thought of. In England, who in England... Who is it? Because he's only coached us, right? Who thinks he's really good? When he was coach of Town, I did think our team was quite limited. And I thought his approach was so defensive. Eventually, he started trying to play open, didn't he, Matt? And we got battered a couple of times. And he kind of resorted back into playing ultra-defensive.
He did what Darren Moore did, essentially, didn't he? Yeah.
He did. And that's a common thing with a new manager in the first gig. When it doesn't quite work, you get more and more and more defensive. And unfortunately for him, because he came across a bit of an idiot, and you could just see the players lose all trust in him. You could see Dwayne Holmes kick a dugout. You could see players just get really angry with the way he was. So. Well, under Fotheringham, you could still see everyone arguing all the time. Goals went in. He just lost them all, and you can't blame him with the way he spoke in interviews. It was just horrific. I just can't believe. Didn't he bring in? He brought in Kenny Miller pretty late on, didn't he? Because he came in initially without any staff. Yeah, was that right? Like, he didn't bring too many.
I think Kenny Miller came after a month or so, a couple of weeks. Yeah, but initially, came in just by himself, which I thought was quite harsh on him, to be honest. Because a guy usually needs to bring his own people in, but the club loved obviously Narcis Pelak, Chicho, and Clem, etc., and wanted to keep them. So he seemed to get on quite well with them. But yeah, I mean. Look at reading again. It's incredible. Away from Scotland, I'm extremely well thought of in England, in Germany, and over the last few weeks, I was with the South Korean national team. Yet in my country, I'm completely overlooked.
Well, he's failed here, and he's failed in South Korea. So I don't know what he's referring to in regards to being well thought of, because it can't be results based on what we've seen and what he's had at South Korea.
What I quite like though is he's quite picky about his next thing, because he says, "I'm keen to work." He says, I'm really looking forward to my next challenge. It has to be the right opportunity, a project that is ambitious. I mean, if you're an ambitious owner looking to move a football team upwards quite quickly, I don't think you give Mark Fotherin a job based on what he's done in the last sort of 12 months. So he might have to take what he can get, to be honest, to Fothers. I mean, he was good for a quote, wasn't he? And good for a laugh, Johnny. But I mean, he's doing a PR spin here, isn't he? Just trying to put his name in the ring for a few things. But I mean, the bit on Huddersfield, you kind of like, what?
It's probably an agent's probably earn a little bit of money out of that, haven't they? Next time he gets a job, if he does. A few things I took from it. I didn't realise he worked with Felix Magath. He never mentioned that. So that was interesting to read from the article. That was news to me.
Never had a steak from Felix Magath or cheese, has he?
I guess the only thing you could say in regards to his win ratio comment, I'm assuming, I'm giving the benefit of doubt, he's not referring to Neil Warnock, because he really is a lunatic. But I think Darren Moores was about early teens, wasn't it? Where I think following
him. Yeah, he's better
like
than Darren Moores, to be fair. He was better than Darren.
In probably rough, you tell me, but pretty much near as damn at the same amount of games. So I guess if he might not want to name names, but if he does name names, he'd probably say, well, 10% better than Darren Moore. Fair enough. But then is that really that much to hang your hat on? Probably not. So yeah, it's an interesting one, to say the least.
I mean, he goes on about spending a load of money, doesn't he? And then not really moving anywhere. I mean, we've only spent money a month ago. Before a month ago, we'd spent absolutely nothing. But to be fair, you know, we look at this January window, he's probably looking at us this January window going, oh, they've got Healy, Radulovic and Balker and this, and I got Martin Waghorn and Florian Camberi. So he's probably looking at that going, I wish I'd have had that window. And I do want him to get another job somewhere else just to see if he's any good, or, you know what I mean? Because at Huddersfield, it was a difficult situation to come into, similar with Darren Moore. And he didn't do great at all. He didn't do as bad as Darren Moore, but I just want him to go somewhere else just to see, just out of curiosity, just to see if he is really bad, or whether it was just a bad job, you know, wrong job, wrong time kind of thing. So I want him to get another job.
It's quite an interesting point, though, Matt. And I think I thought the same about Jan Sievert. And then I think also similarly with Danny Schofield, I'm just looking at this list of town managers. There's not many that have failed at Huddersfield and have gone on to be relatively successful managers. I mean, not to kind of like put a torch to his name, but I think the only one you probably talk about on this list is probably Steve Bruce. But the rest of them, if you generally failed at Town, you've gone on and failed elsewhere. So it would be interesting. He might be the first name for a long, long time that, I mean, hasn't worked at Huddersfield, but then it's gone off, and we've been proved wrong, because even the Cowleys famously said that their prove is wrong, and it's not quite
That's interesting that the Cowleys, I thought they would do better. I thought they'd get Portsmouth up, but they never did they? And they're now at Colchester in the bottom tier. But they did turn Bradford down, which obviously raised their profile in Huddersfield somewhat. But yeah, I mean, Jan Sievert was going off piste a little bit here, but he got the Mainz job, didn't he? And won a couple of games and then got it permanently and then didn't win again and got sacked after, what, 9 games or something. But I quite like Jan as a bloke. So I was quite disappointed to see that didn't work out. I thought he was not a great manager for us, obviously, but he was quite a likable person, I thought, you know, and he really wanted to do well, didn't he, for Huddersfield? And he was very passionate to do well. I thought he was all right. But I think that's pretty much it, isn't it, for this week? We've gone over by 10 minutes or so. But boys, thank you very much for joining us this week. Next week, we'll be back after Town's visit to Watford. Hopefully we'll have some points on the board, and we'll be able to hear from the club next week about Andre Breitenreiter and hear everything in great detail. I'm really looking forward to his first press conference and first thing. I mean, I remember looking back at the David Wagner one, and his English really wasn't great, was it? He was a little bit stuttery at first. I mean, he came across and said he couldn't really speak great English, and then spoke better than half of the population of this podcast, or half, I was going to say half the population of Huddersfield, that's harsh, but half of us on the podcast. And it was really good. And from that moment, you were kind of hooked into him, weren't you? So I don't want to put too much pressure on him for that, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what he's going to say next week. And I think we'll leave it there. So thanks for listening in. Thanks to Magic Rock. Watch out for the Andrew Breitenreiter special and also the preview show coming during the week.
There's a team that is dear to its followers. The colours are bright blue and white. They're a team of renown. They're the pride of the town. And the game of football is their delight. And all the while upon the field of play, thousands loudly cheer them on the way. Often you can hear them say, who can beat the town today? And then the bells will ring so merrily, and every goal shall be a memory. So town, play up and bring that cup back to Huddersfield. So town, play up, bring the cup back to
Lads, what's your favourite 90th minute goal?
Got to be Heffley against Leeds. A shot from Moy and sliding in at the death, Michael Heffley. Great finish to the game. Shared with my family, only made better by ordering McDonald's via McDelivery afterwards. 3 points, McNugget share box, spot on. Order McDelivery now by the McDonald's app. You in.
At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.